Raising teenagers can be a challenge to any parent. The normal growth they experience can feel threatening, and many parents just don't know how to respond. In this session, Joanne will draw upon her medical background to give you some interesting findings about teen brain development. Then Scott and Joanne will share a number of helpful ideas for using honor to build bridges with teens.
Two teenagers at school sat down to have their lunch. One opened his lunch bag and began to scream angrily, "Bologna again! I can't believe it! I hate bologna! This is the fourth time this week I've had bologna! I can't stand bologna!" His friend tried to settle him down. "Take it easy. Why don't you just tell your mom you don't like bologna and ask her to fix you something else?" "My mom? I make my own lunch."
Teenagers are hard to understand sometimes, aren't they? One young man loved children and could hardly wait to have some of his own. He had lots of opinions about how children ought to be raised. In fact, he thought he had something to say about parenting and decided to write a book, even before he had children of his own. The title would be How to Raise Responsible, Successful Children. After his first child turned two, reality started to hit, but he still felt he could write a book. He chose to make it a little smaller and changed its name to A Few Ideas About Raising Children. When his child was in elementary school, he reduced the book even more to a booklet and called it Raising Children is One of the Toughest Jobs in the World. By the time his child became a teenager, he decided to just make a flyer to hand out which read, "Help!"
Are you planning on having teenagers? If you're going to let your children live past 12 years old, you better get used to the idea. The teen years can bring challenges to families, and the problems seem to develop overnight. One dad reported it this way. "My daughter is now 13 years old. She used to be obedient and responsible. I would give her instructions, and I might get a bad attitude at times, but she would generally comply with my requests. Our relationship was okay, and we could usually talk together. Just a few months ago, things began to change. She stopped talking with me and has developed a secret world that she doesn't want her mom or me to know about. I'm not only getting resistance to instructions, but sometimes she outright refuses to do the things I ask. She'll ignore me or say okay and then leave the task undone. Our relationship is explosive, and it seems that anything I say starts an argument. I'm not sure what to do."
Parents find themselves getting frustrated and angry and upset with their teenagers. Some even panic or feel hopeless about family life, but it doesn't have to be that way. The extra energy which comes from these emotions can be channeled into productive activities. Unfortunately, some parents resort to counterproductive measures, only compounding the problem. Parents often react to teens, reducing household honor levels to an all-time low. Honor is a very important ingredient for families during the teen years. One of the first things we want to do as we approach this whole subject of the teens is to look at some developmental issues. Now, Joanne is our nurse, and there have been a number of recent studies done on development of the teen brain. And so Joanne's going to share some information, developmental information, with us about the brain first so we can have some understanding, and then we're going to go from there and talk more about how that applies to family life.
As children begin the teen years, their development enters uncharted territory. Not only are their bodies changing and becoming more mature, but their thinking patterns are also shifting. The brain is not fully developed until the late teens or early 20s. And as it grows, new areas of reason and intellect become available for use. During the ages of 11 to 14, young people enter a new stage of cognitive development. They begin to adopt a value system of their own and gain a greater ability to reason, question, and evaluate their world. Adolescence is a time when young people begin a God-given task of maturity, the ability to think for themselves and make their own decisions. Recent studies of the adolescent brain have revealed some interesting findings. Although the brain is structurally developed by age two, continual use increases its efficiency. In fact, as the child grows, new areas of the brain become available for use. The wiring's always been there, but the lights are just starting to come on. Now, this is a picture of the brain. This is the front of the head, and this is the back. This is the brain stem. There's three parts to the brain. We've got the brain stem, the cerebellum, and the cerebrum. And the brainstem goes down then to the spinal cord. Now, up above the brainstem, right in the center of the brain, there's an area called the limbic area. And that area governs emotions for all of us. And what's happening with young adolescents between 11, 12, 13 years old, there's increased activity in that limbic area. Now, that produces fears, anger, pleasure, sorrow. A lot of the emotions are developing more strongly in that as that part of the brain is developing. Now, there's another part of the brain up here, the cerebrum, and in the frontal area, that's where decision-making and cognitive thinking is taking place. Higher intellectual processes are going on there. Concentration, planning, complex problem-solving, judging the consequences of behavior. That goes on up here, and that area of the brain is not going into so much change until later on in adolescence. So what happens is this area of the brain where the emotions are being dealt with is experiencing more growth and development earlier on than the cognitive areas of the brain. So what happens then is that the difference in developmental progress that teens experience sometimes cause the teens to make foolish choices. Some of those choices are even harmful to them, like driving while drinking, trying drugs, doing some things that are out there, and they're just not anticipating the consequences because that part of the brain has not caught up with the other parts. Brain development further motivates young people to evaluate the things that they're being asked to do, the values that they're being taught, and the daily choices that they make. Teens are an important stage where they're developing that adult thinking pattern. They're beginning to embrace some ideas of their own values, what they want to be, how they want people to see them, what kind of person do I want to be. They're subconsciously asking these questions and making those value judgments. Now, in an attempt to develop a personal independence, adolescents question the guidelines, the rules, and the habits, the things they've been taught through their younger years. They're beginning to question them. Now, this questioning sometimes causes parents to get frustrated because of all the questioning that's going on, but really, we can see the doubts and the questioning as just a developmental stage, and through that process, our children can gain some greater convictions about who they're going to be and what they're going to believe. But to get to those greater, deeper convictions, they need to do that questioning and the doubting and the developing. So as parents, we don't want to just react to our teens, but we want to understand that developmental process they're going through and just help them through it. In the process, they may reject authority. They may reject their parents and the teachers and some other leaders that are around them. But we want to be patient with them, helping them through this time, because it's a confusing time for them as well. Often, adolescents are trying to figure out how to be independent and at the same time not disappoint their parents. And so they've got a dilemma, and they don't know exactly what they're going to do and how they're going to make the decisions. One of the goals of parenting during these important years is to continue to help children embrace a value system that will enable them to become responsible, healthy adults. All the work of the early years may seem a waste when a child begins to make some independent decisions. One parent said, "I can't believe he's doing this. It goes against everything we've taught him for the last 14 years." It's important for parents to understand what's happening, though, in their growing teen. Then they can be wiser in the way they choose their battles, and they know what to address and what to just discuss with their child and let the child make choices. Now, some convictions as parents we need to hold on to, but some of them we can allow our child to evaluate through. We're going to make some decisions of what our child is allowed to do and what they're not allowed to do. What are they ready for? What are they not ready for? Some of those decisions we need to be making for them, we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. How do we know what they're ready for? But we want to understand what's going on in their brain, first of all, so we can be a little bit more compassionate with them as they're struggling. And we need to just work with their developmental process and help them to the point of maturity.
That's interesting, because not only are children growing and changing and trying to figure out how to relate to themselves, but parents are often trying to figure out what to do with this kid too. And so adolescent changes often startle parents. They feel threatened by the new thinking and the behavior. In fact, it's hard not to feel threatened when you're continually getting attacked by a teenager, or you never know when they're going to explode. It makes it difficult. And it's hard to know whether this is a phase that should be ignored or the beginning of a problem which needs urgent action. Images of their child joining a radical group or running away from home or forsaking family values can cause parents to either react harshly or just give up altogether.
One mom felt hurt, but considered her daughter's meanness as normal. Aren't children supposed to hate their parents in order to ease the upcoming separation? Another mom had given up. You just have to get used to their disrespect. Hopefully someday they'll appreciate you, but not now. There's no chance. Misunderstanding adolescent changes hinders closeness in a family, and parents often don't know where to draw the line. Independent thinking is healthy, but disrespect is not. Choosing one's own values is important, but it's not an excuse for dishonor. Parents who don't realize the difference miss a valuable teaching opportunity. Furthermore, teens may appear to be hard, but they're still very sensitive. When parents dish it out the same way teens do, teens get hurt. Their understanding of themselves is much more fragile than their actions lead you to believe. Teens are at a prime time for life-altering experiences. An offhand comment might make a lasting impression, so be careful what you say and how you say it.
It requires wisdom to maneuver through the whole dimension of teen life. And often parents are surprised, and when they're surprised, they react in dishonoring ways to their children. I remember one Saturday morning, Josh, my oldest son, was about 12 years old, and I reminded him to clean his room, because in the Taransky family, we always clean our rooms on Saturday morning. We've been doing it for who knows how long. But this particular Saturday, Josh chose to test out a new value, go something like this. It's my room. The mess isn't hurting anyone but me. Therefore, you shouldn't get involved in my problem and tell me to clean my room since it doesn't affect you. Now, that's a common idea. Maybe you've heard it before. The problem with that philosophy is that parents and children are together not as housemates tolerating each other's weaknesses, but we have a job to do. Parents have a job to train their children and instill values in them, and children have a responsibility to learn those things. But that all made sense to me, makes sense to me now. But then I was irritated and surprised, and it kind of took me back, and so I blew him away. I looked at him and said, that's the same thing some adults say to justify wrong behavior, and society ends up paying for what those people do in secret. Josh was stunned by my response, and he quietly walked away. I could tell he was hurt. I had won in the argument department, but I had lost in the relationship department. And I also missed a good opportunity to help Josh explore a new value. I came back to him later on and apologized for my intensity and for robbing him of the opportunity to test out his idea. He still had to clean his room, though.
In response to the changes during adolescence, some parents come on too strong, and they find their children pulling back further than necessary. Other parents dislike conflict, and so they let too much slide by, missing opportunities to influence their teen. One dad we'll call Andrew recounted a valuable and painful lesson he learned as a parent. This is a letter he sent us. I remember the summer well. It will always be etched as a dark spot in my relationship with my son. I watched a talk show that advanced a popular idea. They took out-of-control teenagers and stripped them of their honor in order to break their will. They sent these kids to boot camp with drill sergeants yelled in their faces. I guess for some kids it worked, because when they interviewed them afterwards, some seemed to be changed. But at the same time, it didn't seem right. Nevertheless, when my son was 16 years old, I decided I would set up my own boot camp. It was probably the darkest time in our relationship ever. I determined to make him comply, and I sure wasn't going to use honor to achieve it. I got him a hard labor job doing landscaping, where he had to get up before dawn each day. A couple of times he tried to sleep in, but I made him get up and pull weeds in the backyard in his pajamas. He even tried to sneak off to Grandma's house so he could sleep in one of her rooms during the day, but I found out about it. I rifled through his clothes and his backpack looking for cigarettes and drug paraphernalia. If he protested, I informed him that he really didn't own anything, because it all belonged to me. I bought him his stuff, he ate my food, he lived in my house, and I'd go through his things any day because they really were my things, etc., etc. At times, I even got physically rough and verbally intimidating in order to make my point. No sense of honor existed between us. After a few weeks, he wrote me this. I've kept this letter for several years now. Dad, I'm writing this letter to you to tell you how I feel about you. I hate you. You've been getting on my nerves, watching me all the time. It doesn't matter who I'm with. You won't even let me ride the bus anywhere besides back and forth from work to home. Ever since I started working at that landscaping company and you yelled at me those first few mornings for not being on time for work, I knew this summer was going to suck. We've done some fun things, but you've given me no freedom. I could never say these things, so I've decided to write you this letter, since this is the only way I can get through to you. It's too bad we can't all get along. I think you treat the dog better than me. Jacob. Andrew goes on to say, Jacob turns 21 in a couple of days. More recently, we've talked about that summer. Neither of us think I handled that situation in the best way. I've since changed my tactics and have treated him with as much honor as I can muster. I'm still firm with him at times, but at least he knows I value him like another human being. Our relationship improved dramatically from that point.
It's sad to see some of the mistakes that parents make. Unfortunately, many don't discover it until it's too late, leaving lasting scars on relationships. It doesn't have to be that way. With understanding and a lot of work, parents can continue to enjoy their children during the teen years. If parents are prepared for the changes, the teen years can be a time of deepening relationship, not distance and pain. Honor provides significant benefits to families during the teen years. Parents can skillfully maneuver through this time to help young people accomplish the goals of adolescence and learn valuable skills for success. In addition to this, if teens catch a vision for honor, they can make this time in their lives more productive for themselves and easier for all.
Most parents recognize in advance the stage of development is approaching, and they take early steps to anticipate and head off problems. By knowing that God has designed young people to experience substantial cognitive growth and to even change the way they think, parents can learn to work with the developmental stages instead of against them. Discussing the concept of honor with teens has led us to some valuable insights. It's fascinating to listen to their concerns and ideas. Teenagers find themselves in a developmental predicament. They're trying to build their own value system and a certain amount of independence. In the process, they tend to value their own ideas and opinions over those of anyone else.
When challenged with the concept that honor means to value others, one teen responded honestly, "How can you honor someone you don't really value?" A problem arises when a person's worth or value isn't easily apparent. A teen might dishonor his mom because he doesn't appreciate her and even considers her opinions foolish. He may overreact, pull away, or make sarcastic remarks. Mom may react with anger when treated poorly and over time lose any sense of value she once had for her son. The loss of worth on the part of both parent and teen leads to an erosion in the relationship. It's especially harmful when parents give up or become hostile in response to teen rejection. We believe this to be a serious parenting mistake, which may contribute to young people searching for different friends and authorities who will listen and accept them.
One teen honestly asked, "What if I don't find my parents valuable?" And in some families today, that's a very real question. How can a son honor a father who's a drunkard or who has abandoned the family? How can a daughter honor a mom who is harsh or abusive? How can a brother honor a little sister who continually whines? Or how can a parent honor a teen who has disowned family values? These are not easy questions and often provide excuses for dishonor on the part of teens or parents. Teens may find it difficult at times to value even the best of parents. But it isn't just a teen problem. All of us at times find it difficult to see the value in others. When others' worth or value isn't easily apparent, a person has to learn to honor by faith. Each person has intrinsic value to God and is significant and worthwhile to Him. Often when you start with God's perspective, you recognize the value of even a difficult person. There's usually a time, though, in a young person's life when the value of parents becomes unrecognizable. These years can become a faith-building time for young people as they understand what's happening and trust God.
It reminds me of the time I took Josh and Melissa, my older two children, on a canoe trip. We wanted to enter the water close to our home, the stream, and just take it wherever it led. We didn't know exactly where it led, but we assumed it would end up in the Delaware River. And that would require a trip all the way through the heart of Trenton. And so we were pretty interested to take this trip. But realizing we're going through a city, we realized the river might go underground at some point, and we'd have to abandon our trip. So we arranged with Carrie to pick us up at any point along the way when we just crawl out and out of the river and find a payphone and call her. We started the trip, and at first we could see wherever we were going around the turns, and it was a nice trip as we were going through toward the Delaware, just like we'd expected. As we got further into Trenton, though, we came to a cement tunnel, which looked like it was going down. We thought, oh, well, this is the end. I crawled up the side of the bank, went across the busy streets, looking where the river might come out. Finally, about a quarter mile down away, I saw another stream look just like the one we were on. So we decided to go for it. So we got back in, went into the tunnel, into the dark tunnel, together, being adventuresome. And we used the paddle to stay away from the sides of the tunnel because we couldn't see anything. It was pitch black when we got in there. And we imagined rats and all kinds of other things enjoying this pleasant afternoon with us. It was dark. It was scary, but it was a fun experience for us. In the midst of the tunnel, there were a number of uncertainties, many questions, and even fears. The teen years can be like that. Honoring mom and dad during the tunnel years can be quite a challenge. For some budding teens, it just doesn't make sense. The wise young person, however, will seek to honor parents by faith, recognizing, as many have before, that this is only a tunnel, and tunnels have a way of playing tricks on our vision.
Honor is a step of faith and requires that a person live life in a way that acknowledges God's care and control. Honor is easy with some people, but it seems that each person has someone in their life that's a challenge to honor. When teens learn to honor by faith, new doors open up in relationships. Some people have the misconception that you have to like someone in order to show honor, but that's not true. Honor isn't about liking someone, it's about valuing a person that you may not like. As teens get older, they'll find others who are difficult to honor. It may be a boss, a church leader, a parent, or even a child. During these times, they must trust their Heavenly Father and honor by faith. Who knows? It could be an unexpected gift of honor that God uses to bring change in that other person's life. Working on honor in a difficult situation can be a way to get a personal handle on God's life of faith. We want to give you some suggestions for teaching teens honor, and we've divided them into two categories. Both of them are important. The first is proactive, and the second is corrective. Many parents are continually correcting their children, and they might benefit from the proactive suggestions. Others don't know how to correct without creating World War III, and they benefit from the corrective suggestions.
Let's start with proactive suggestions for developing honor. Proactive has this idea of looking ahead, trying to head off problems, anticipating challenges. Don't wait for a problem to manifest itself, but instead take advantage of the peaceful or successful moments in family life. Most parents are so weary of the battle, they cherish any positive interludes as a time to rest up for the next war. It's at this time, however, when you can do significant work in the area of honor. Proactive approaches are positive and more productive than corrective techniques for developing honor in the family. Here are a few suggestions. The first one is an activity we call the Teenage Challenge. It's something that we've used, both the Taranskys and the Millers have used with our children. Before each of our children turn 13 years old, we enter into a six-month project called the Teenage Challenge. Interestingly enough, we use this not just in our family, but in many other families as well. Now, some parents will use this with children who are just turning 13. Others will use it later on in teen life as well. To create the Teenage Challenge, first you need to identify 8 to 10 honor qualities that would help your young person gain the most from adolescence. One of the goals in this exercise is to give young people an exciting anticipation of the teen years. You want to define each quality, and you want to give an activity that works with that quality to make it function well. I'll give you an example. One of the qualities we use with our children in the Teenage Challenge is humility. But a working definition which goes like this: learning to value the ideas, opinions, and advice of others, being willing to admit mistakes and respond with grace, learning to say you're sorry and thank you. We give a Bible verse to memorize in this case, Titus 3:1-2, remind the people to be subject to rulers and authorities, to be obedient, to be ready to do whatever is good, to slander no one, to be peaceable and considerate, and to show true humility toward all men. Now, the activity we did with our kids, this one, is that we had them do a survey or an opinion poll. I gave them my little small tape recorder and told them to go around to at least 10 people and find the answer to these questions. One question in particular: what could I do to make the most of my teenage years? And then write a few of their favorite answers down in their notebook. So we go through qualities like forgiveness, anger control, respect for authority. We talk about gratefulness. We talk about initiative, taking initiative. Whatever the qualities are that we feel are appropriate with that particular teenager, we give them a whole booklet of things, and they start working on it for several months. Now, we anticipate in advance some kind of reward at the end that they can earn. learn, and we look forward to that and celebrate it. So it becomes kind of an initiation time as they're a rite of passage for our kids as they turn 13 and are moving toward adulthood. That's the first thing. The teenage challenge is one idea that we've used.
Another proactive idea is to look for ways to show honor to teens. Wise parents learn how to treat teens with honor and thus model it for them. Look for ways to treat a teen as an adult or even as a friend. When teens feel like they're being treated with honor, they're more open and receptive to relationship and guidance from their parents. Asking for an opinion and then listening to the response or allowing a teen to be a part of a decision shows that you value their input. Asking questions about teen interests and then listening to the explanation demonstrates an acceptance of young people. Even though your preferences may be different, you want to listen and just draw them out and find out what they're into and just listen without critiquing what they're saying. Honor doesn't mean that we're just wishy-washy and overly lenient. Honor can still be demonstrated in the midst of firm boundaries and clear expectations. But listening to objections and compromising about differences can be helpful demonstrations of honor. Be careful about not abandoning your convictions just for the sake of peace. If you decided that your teen can't watch movies that are rated PG-13 without your okay, then don't back down. Even when your teens are at a friend's house, they need to honor your convictions because that's the way you've set it up. So you want to be a place where you're evaluating, you're talking, you're discussing, but you're also going to stick to some of those convictions that are most important.
So that's important. You want to look for ways to show honor to your teens. The third thing you can do in a proactive setting is to expect honor in return. Honor is a two-way street. When a teen asks permission or makes a request, use that opportunity to make a comment about honor. Excuse me, the way you're treating me isn't very kind right now. Would you please try that again? You're asking me for something, but you're treating me like dirt. Would you try to ask me that again? And let's see where we can go here. So we're expecting honor in return, just in daily dialogue and conversation. And when a child asks permission for something, it's an excellent way, because they're highly motivated, to have them start to learn some of the skills of honor. You can't treat people poorly and then expect them to do something for you. In the same breath, a teen may make a disrespectful remark and then turn around and ask for some money. Teens may not see the inconsistency which seems so obvious to the parent. That's a good time to talk about honor and even require an apology for the unkind word before giving the money. One teen asked his dad to drive him to the mall. Dad was quiet for a moment and then said, "I feel uncomfortable taking you to the mall. I'm still feeling bad about the harsh way you asked me to leave your room an hour ago." The son was quiet, realizing that an unkind word now would surely mean no ride. Dad continued, "Why don't you think about how you're treating me and let's get back together and talk about it in a little bit." The son went away, but came back a few minutes later to apologize.
Another way to encourage honor in the family is just to talk about honor. Because teens are evaluating life and they're opinionated, you want to engage them in value discussions which involve honor. The newspapers are full of ethical dilemmas. Athletes, politicians, and entertainment figures often give good illustrations of honoring and dishonoring actions. We want to ask open-ended questions and not be afraid to engage in dialogue, even if it's controversial. What we're doing is we're dialoguing, we're listening to their opinions, we're validating what they're saying, allowing them to make observations, we're making observations. So we want to focus not only on honor in the family, but also honor out in the world around us, the families around us and the things that are in the news. Be talking about them and bringing up the issue of honor in those discussions. Teens have interesting perspectives on honor. In one discussion that we had with teens, a thoughtful girl said this, "It sounds like kissing up to me." Now another teen responded to that by saying, "Kissing up with the teacher is something you pretend to do on the outside when you want something. Honor, on the other hand, is when you actually like the teacher and want to do something for him." Another teen objected and said, "Well, I don't think you have to like the person to honor them." And then another child said, "Well, it sure helps." And we all laughed. But what we're doing here is just getting ideas from teens. What is honor and what isn't it? And what do you think about that? And how do you live that out in your life? Not only were we getting ideas from these teens, but we were validating their ideas and we were valuing them just because we were listening to them and we wanted their opinions and we were interested in their perspective.
Another way that we can be proactive in teaching honor to children is to understand the need for a teenage parenting shift. As children grow and mature, parents must make adjustments in the way they parent. Some of those changes in parenting are minor or subtle. Others are more significant. For example, when a tiny infant comes home from the hospital, that infant kind of takes over the schedule for a family. The feeding schedule just interrupts everything else that's going on. But as the child gets older, the parents are going to set limits on a mobile child. They're going to have a child start working into a schedule for meals and so on. So an important shift in parenting takes place from the infant stage and the toddler stage. Parents need to make that adjustment. If they don't, then those toddlers become manipulative, they become demanding, and parents start feeling really uncomfortable because their 2 and 3 year olds running the family. That was okay when they were 6 months old, but now they need to start learning limits and need to learn how to respond in a different way. Now, another shift takes place all the way along. There are shifts that take place as a child's growing up, and we've identified a number of them. We might write a book someday about parenting shifts as we see them. But there's another very significant shift that takes place when children turn teenagers, right before they become 12, 13, right in that area. We need to make another parenting shift. Rigid parents who don't make the necessary adjustments experience increased friction and frustration in family dynamics. Parents who are indulgent to their children or always doing things for them when they're younger also experience similar friction and frustration with these teens. Teens need more discussion about issues and concerns. Discipline involves more explaining and talking rather than just requiring compliance. A parent may say, "I'm not going to make you give your little brother one of those cookies you made for school, but I'd like to talk about it. I'd like to hear what you're thinking because it just seems selfish to me."
As children mature, parents can now communicate with them in a more adult manner by listening and explaining. Change comes through compromise and mutual agreement rather than just by strictly obeying the parent's instructions. Sometimes conversations end in disagreement, leaving parents and teens in a dilemma. Even that can be good as the discussion changes and both the parent and the teen try to evaluate what's right for this particular situation. Russ, age 13, was exchanging a trading card with a neighbor, Christina. After the trade was done, Christina decided that she changed her mind and wanted to trade back. But the children already had an agreement, there are no trade backs, so it left them in a dilemma. Now, a parent could have come in and just told the children how to solve that problem, but instead the parent just asked Russ some questions. You know, what's right in this situation? Is it possible to be right and still do the wrong thing? And just pull out some values in that whole discussion and then allow that child to go back and solve it the way he thinks is best. And in this situation, Russ went back and resolved the problem by giving an additional card to Christina in a way to honor her. It was his choice to solve the problem that way. He wasn't being told what to do, but it was a demonstration of honor. Sometimes rights have to be sacrificed for relationship, and honor can be a sign of maturity in a difficult situation.
Even the best of parents, though, must make some changes in the way they parent. The old method of relating don't work the same way anymore. In fact, they seem to cause problems instead. Of all the changes that teens make, the most significant one is the adjustment in their relationship with their parents. They're moving from a parent-child relationship to an adult-adult relationship. That means that we're expecting more from this child than we would otherwise, because now we're entering into a new kind of relationship. It's an adult-adult relationship. Adults relate to each other in a particular way, different from the way that a parent relates to a young child. Unfortunately, some parents still treat their children as if they're 8 or 9 years old. Honor helps parents recognize the changes and makes the necessary adjustments. Although you may be able to control young children, the key word for teenagers is influence. 5 words describe the different ways you can influence teens. One is to teach, which means we provide them with new information about how they can live life or a new facet of life. Second thing is to encourage them, remind them of the benefits of moving in the right direction. The third one is to entreat, to earnestly ask them to act in a mature, responsible, and wise way. A fourth word is admonish, which means we warn or caution or advise them by anticipating the possible negative consequences. And lastly, we persuade. We use relationship, rewards, and consequences to motivate young people to make wise decisions.
As parents make the teenage parenting shift, they learn the importance of validating their young person's thoughts and feelings before suggesting how to do something differently. Parents often take on a coach relationship with their teens as the young person learned how to maneuver and interact in an adult world. Teens learn how to communicate with honor and how to express themselves in a healthy way. One mom was trying to treat her 12-year-old differently. This is what she said. I'm trying to shift my parenting with Penny. The changes are good, and I see how valuable and necessary they are. Unfortunately, sometimes she doesn't respond, though, and then I panic and I revert back to what worked in the past. Penny feels hurt, and I feel like I failed. It's dangerous to respond to rebellion by coming on stronger. Change isn't easy. Talk about the changes, though. Be patient and resist the temptation to revert back to less helpful solutions. Parents can enjoy their teens on a friendship level, exploring their interests and sharing thoughts and feelings together. Make encouraging comments with your young person. Talk about their maturity, the character development that you're seeing. Build up the things that they are already doing, the ways that they're changing, as your relationship begins to take on this new dimension.
So we've talked about several proactive suggestions for teaching honor to teens. Let's talk about corrective, because often when we have correction required, we have conflict that exists in relationships. What unfortunately happens is that it's like a poker game almost. One child will argue, and another parent will raise the intensity level, and the other child will raise it even more. And so pretty soon you've got a huge fight that's going on, and that becomes unproductive, certainly not honoring. So we want to give several suggestions for correcting in children using honor. And so the first one we're going to just call that, correct in an honoring way. Harshness is dishonoring. Instead, set firm limits and talk about your convictions. I'm going to have to say no to that activity because sometimes things happen there that I don't want you to be associated with. Explain reasons and the values behind the rules. It's important to let teens know that they may not always agree with you, and that's a time when they're just going to have to submit. The way you communicate the final decision, though, can show honor. I'm sorry we disagree on this. I'm going to have to ask you to do it my way this time, even though you don't like it. I wish we could come to some kind of compromise, but I just don't see one this time. Hopefully, as time goes on, they'll learn to trust your opinion and convictions, but most importantly, they'll know that they're appreciated and valued. Unity isn't always achieved through agreement. Sometimes it's achieved when one person graciously gives in to another. Another thing you can do to correct in an honoring way is to express disappointment for poor choices. Disappointment communicates sadness. Now, it's important to express disappointment with the actions or the behavior, not with the person. Otherwise, it becomes a guilt trip. In fact, this is a great opportunity to communicate a teen's potential, which is hindered by a poor choice. I'm disappointed that you didn't follow through with what we agreed upon. That's not being responsible. And if it continues, it's going to hinder your success as you get older.
Another technique for correcting teens is this idea that privilege and responsibility go together. Now, Jesus said, whoever has will be given more. He was teaching his disciples that those who are responsive to his message will receive more insight. The same principle is true in life, that responsibility leads to more privilege. Too often, parents give privileges to their children who aren't responsible enough to handle them. Just because a child is 14 doesn't mean that she's mature enough to go to a friend's house without supervision. Don't give privileges based on age. Use responsibility as a guide instead. A child may wonder when she's old enough to be able to babysit. So she says, Mom, how old do I have to be when I can start to babysit? Well, the mom was wise and she said this. The answer doesn't have to do with age. It has to do with responsibility. Well, how are you going to know when I'm responsible enough? Well, I'll see signs of responsibility at home. I can tell when you're responsible by how you take care of your room and what kind of choices you make when I'm not around. Responsibility is demonstrated in children in many ways, and honor is at the heart of it. Cleaning up after a snack, taking initiative to clear the table, being honest in a difficult situation, responding to correction without blaming an offense on others, handling disappointment with a good attitude are all ways that children can demonstrate responsibility.
This idea of responsibility and privilege going together is a primary way that we teach parents to discipline teenagers. Because parents end up, especially at this age, giving their children a lot of privileges. And if privilege is given without responsibility, we end up with some significant problems. And so what we end up doing is tying privileges and responsibility very closely, because that's what happens in life. In life, as adults, privilege and responsibility are linked very closely. Since we've been working on this with teenagers, we've listed just a number of privileges and responsibilities. Let me list some of them. Privileges are things like privacy, staying home alone while mom and dad are out, going to the mall alone, having an email address, having internet access, having a cell phone, having a beeper, going to a friend's house, having friends over, having money. Those are all privileges that children have sometimes. Responsibilities are things like honesty, taking responsibility for mistakes instead of blaming or excusing, reporting in or coming home on time, anger control, saying no to temptation when you're alone, taking a stand for doing the right thing when you're with friends. Responsibility means you don't have to be checked up on continually. Now, giving a child his own phone isn't wrong, but a child who can't handle it may spend a lot of time talking with friends who are a bad influence. Unmonitored internet access can be dangerous for some, since there's a lot of bad stuff out there. Chat rooms and email accounts require character or kids get into trouble. Having your own radio can be a bad influence. Hanging out with friends can be a problem. Leaving a young person at home unmonitored, or allowing a teenage guy to go over to a girl's house when parents aren't home, is a problem. Teens may say, "You don't trust me." And the answer is, "You're right. I wouldn't trust myself in a situation like that." It has to do with wisdom. Show me that you're responsible with checking in, doing your jobs around the house without being reminded, taking a stand for doing what's right when you're in a difficult situation. And then we could talk about you having some of the privileges that you're requesting. Some parents think their kids are cute when they are carrying around a cell phone or a beeper. But then they're shocked when they get the phone bill revealing $100 worth of 900 number charges on it. Other parents want to give children things that they didn't have as kids. Unfortunately, when children don't have the character to match the privilege, they become irresponsible, and that just festers and creates more and more irresponsibility in those children. You end up doing more damage than you thought possible. It's like a young person is learning how to swim. They're out there treading water and trying to learn how to be a responsible, mature adult. That's the task of adolescence, is to grow into adulthood. Parents are on the boat looking at their child and seeing them struggle and often want to toss toys out to them. Of course, the kids love the toys, and they then don't learn how to swim. Some parents inadvertently give their children privileges before they're ready, and in doing so contribute to their child's drowning, that is, their inability to be responsible as they get older.
So privilege and responsibility go together. Another corrective technique is to keep in mind character. Take time to identify character weaknesses and then respond accordingly. Relating the consequence to the specific weakness can be more productive than just grounding a child. You might say, "I sense an ungrateful spirit in you, yet you're coming and continually asking me to sacrifice for you. I don't mind helping you, but I'm going to say no this time, and I'm going to watch to see if your gratefulness increases for the things I'm already doing for you." This type of response teaches young people the value of gratefulness instead of just considering their own goals and desires. A teen who lacks thoughtfulness about household chores may need a contract where the parent agrees to drive them to an event when they agree to clean out the car. This again forces young people to give up demandingness and think about the needs of others. Sometimes teens want to come home and they go out and do all the things they're doing, and when they come home they expect food to be on the table and their clothes to be cleaned. Honor teaches teens to give, not just to expect to receive.
One mom who was raising her fifth teenager said, "Alan, age 13, was diagnosed with ADHD in kindergarten. He's often assertive in order to control situations. In fact, he becomes overly assertive sometimes. My husband and I, though, have learned over the years that when we see areas of weakness, those areas of weakness become strengths later on. Alan is daring, and he's not afraid to try something new. This last summer, he went on a mission trip and was the youngest member of the team. He did well and was more bold than many of the others. They found his assertiveness and encouragement. This mom's going to be successful with Alan because she sees his strengths among the frustrations and is helping him see them as well." You want to make observations for teens and give them feedback about their actions. It looks like you're easily influenced by your peers, you might say. Or, well, you seem to have trouble managing money. Now, those words are not kind. See, habits are often ingrained, and continual observation moves the teen slowly to a recognition of others and how to treat them with honor.
A demanding teen would benefit from understanding the difference between wishes, desires, and demands. When a child comes to the dinner table and sees spaghetti being served, he might think, "Boy, I wish there were meatballs too." Or he might express a desire by saying, "I want meatballs in my spaghetti." A demanding child, however, would say, "I must have meatballs in my spaghetti or I'm not going to eat it," and then treat mom in a mean way. Teens must learn to remove their demands back down to desires or even wishes. This will help them avoid becoming explosive when they don't get their own way.
Talk about character, not just behavior. A teen struggling with doing a sloppy job with chores may need to understand thoroughness. It's an important quality. I mean, that's what an employer is looking for in an employee. As parents focus their discipline on developing character, teens can see its relevance to their growing independence. I like the story of Gregory and his friends who were playing with a BB gun when one of them accidentally shot out a neighbor's window. They all ran home. The police knocked on Gregory's door in the evening and asked if he was involved in the incident. His dad said, "Oh no, he couldn't have been." But Gregory interrupted, "I was with my friends when it happened." Gregory was actually showing honor by telling his father the truth, even though he might get into trouble. Dad not only thanked him for telling the truth, but also commended him for the strong character quality of honesty he saw in his son. Correcting teens is an unpleasant part of parenting, but it is necessary if you want to teach your teens to be successful and responsible adults.
There are a number of conflict resolution skills which encourage honor. The way a parent talks and the way teens talk is very important. It's tempting for parents to use the same dishonoring communication that their teens are using. A 16-year-old boy received his driver's license and asked his dad, "Dad, could I use the car?" Dad replied, "Son, I told you could use the car when you get your hair cut." "Well, Dad, I've been thinking about that. Jesus had long hair." To which his dad replied, "Yeah, and he walked everywhere he went." See, conflict situations provide good opportunities to teach and model honor. This dad chose to make a dishonoring joke at his son's expense and missed a valuable opportunity with his son. I'm going to give you three reminders that can help you in conflict situations.
Conflict is often a real good opportunity, and so the first thing you need to do in conflict is learn how to start. The way you present an issue often determines its outcome. Sometimes it's best to address a problem immediately. Other times it's best to wait a couple hours. Wisely choose a time and a place and even an approach with the goal of not just rebuking but correcting and finding resolution. Lisa, I'd like to talk to you about the way you treated me earlier. Is now a good time or should we wait till after dinner?
In conflict situations, it's important to know how to start. It's also important to know how to stop. Once a dialogue has developed, you have to have discernment to know when to stop. Some parents feel like they must win the argument and come to resolution by the end of the discussion, so they keep pushing harder and harder. Other times emotions get too involved and it gets out of hand. Still other parents end a simple correction with preaching, bringing up the past, or making exaggerated statements about the offense. In any case, it's important for parents to know when to take a break or simply stop the conversation. "Boy, I think we'd better stop here. Things are getting pretty tense. We need to continue this conversation, but let's take a break for now. Maybe we'll even think of some other ideas in the meantime so we can resolve this problem." Learning when to stop during conflict is an important skill.
A third important skill in conflict management is to learn how to listen. Conflict represents opportunities. Teen watch parents handle conflict and observe how they resolve differences. Listening and affirming a young person's thinking is an honoring step in conflict management. "I understand you discipline your sister differently. Your ideas make sense. At this point, I have to make the decision, and I'm going to emphasize something different, but I appreciate your ideas." Affirming or validating a teen's thinking or reasoning is helpful for their development. As parents dialogue with their teens, they must learn to tolerate criticism. Many discussions you have will open the door for your teen to criticize you. Don't feel threatened or take those jabs personally. Use them to discuss issues and explain your decisions. If you can be transparent enough to use yourself as an example, your teens will learn much more about life. Asking questions can launch a team into a discussion and give you an opportunity to listen. "Do you feel like we resolved the issue we discussed this morning, or did you have some further thoughts?" J. Genuine questions can open the doors for teens to clear off their emotional plate and feel freedom in their spirit. We all wish that others would agree with us, but when that's not possible, the next best thing is that people would understand us, and listening and understanding are the next best thing.
Teens need honor even when they don't deserve it. The teen years can be quite a challenge for parents, for families. In fact, it's during that time that many parents become discouraged and want to give up. One parent made an observation that Isaac must have been 12 years old when Abraham was asked to sacrifice him on Mount Moriah. Another parent asked, why? Well, because if he was a teenager, it wouldn't have been a sacrifice. That illustrates how parents often feel. Ironically, though, it's during this stage of a child's development when a parent's wisdom is needed the most. Even though the teen may not want it, they really need that direction and guidance from their parents. You can teach ideas and values, but the way you interact communicates the most about honor.
A teacher took a high school student aside one day. You have a lot of potential. You're smart, and you write very well. But I'd like to mention something else I've noticed about you here at school. You seem to have an attitude problem. You criticize other people in order to build yourself up. You have the potential to be friends with many people, but you're making some poor decisions. I think you're robbing yourself of some of the best things in life by your selfishness. The teen was shocked by his teacher's bluntness. No one has ever had the guts to tell me those things to my face before. It's as if he was saying, because of all the adults in my life have just left me alone to do my own thing, I've felt dishonored. Nobody has shown me that they care enough to confront me. That young person marked that day as a pivotal point of change in his life. Many a teen will struggle for a few years and then grow in great appreciation of a parent who will be faithful, patient, firm, and loving. The teen years can be a tremendous opportunity for modeling the finer skills of honor.
Working with teenagers can be a challenge for even the best of parents. Despite your efforts, you'll find your relationship with your teen strained at times. Take those times to further develop your relationship with your Heavenly Father. Pray for your teenager. God is the only one who changes hearts. The ultimate solution for poor character is repentance and submission to the Lordship of Christ. As parents, you must honor God and trust Him no matter what. That's the best gift you could ever give to your teenagers.
This concludes this session. We trust that you have benefited from the Ministry of Effective Parenting. If you would like information about other resources available through Effective Parenting, just call area code 609-771-8002, or you can call toll-free 1-800-771-8334. Thank you very much for joining us for this session, and may God richly bless you and your family.